Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. And all this week, leading up to Juneteenth, we've been taking some time on this show to explore some underreported episodes from Black history. A new walking tour from the Tenement Museum seeks to do just that by uncovering the often forgotten history of Black New Yorkers who called the Lower East Side home. Though many might think of the Lower East Side as historically a community of European immigrants, the Reclaiming Black Spaces walking tour of the neighborhood demonstrates that Black residents have been a key part of the community from the beginning. The tour is available Friday through Monday, and tickets are available on the Tenement Museum website. Joining us now to discuss some of the stops on the tour is Lauren O'Brien, lead scholar for the museum. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Allison. How are you?
I am doing great. She's lead project scholar for this museum, for this tour. And Kat Lloyd, director of programs at the museum. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Allison. Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. I'm very excited to talk about this. I learned a lot in reading about this. Lauren, you know, I think most people think about the Lower East Side as having this immigrant history, Jewish folks, German folks. What are some of the common misconceptions about the makeup of the Lower East Side through history, and how do Black voices and stories get forgotten?
Yes, I think one of the common misconceptions is that Black New Yorkers or African Americans came during the Great Migration. So this is the 20th century or far later, or they're primarily in Harlem. But what's missing is that Black New Yorkers have been been a part of the city since its founding. And because Lower Manhattan, where, you know, the beginnings of New York began, is very close in proximity to the Lower East Side, naturally there would be residential patterns there. And so I think one of the biggest ways that the misconception that people are African Americans are not on the Lower East Side are the numbers. So you don't often see them in the photos when you see pictures of the Lower East Side that are predominantly of immigrants. But we know from institutions and the buildings that still kind of are still there, even though maybe the church has changed or there was an African preschool that's now a regular apartment. But like, so the bones of that history are still there where the people are no longer there. And so I think that's where some of the disconnect comes. Mm-hmm. But that's where this tour is really trying to use kind of the permanence of the built environment to show how people have been displaced by numerous factors or have sought out communities that were more predominantly Black, so moving and migrating, but I would say the African Americans or just people of Black descent have been in the city in all different parts for centuries.
Catherine, why is a walking tour a good way to experience this history?
Well, as New Yorkers, right, we walk our streets every day, passing by buildings that maybe we don't always stop or have time to stop to think about what history they may contain. Mm-hmm. And so all of the Tenement Museum's walking tours really allow us and invite us to pause and look at the built environment that is around us, the city we live in now, and to ask ourselves the question of, you know, what history does this building hold? What was here before this building was here? And in a walking tour, we can really look at, buildings and sites and land that help us connect to different time periods. And so this particular walking tour, it takes us as far back as, the 1640s to look at land that would have once been, farmland owned by a man named Sebastian de Brito, who was of African descent. So it takes us all the way back to the 1640s and then can take us all the way up to the 1970s. Our most recent stop on the tour looks at a jazz performance space called Studio Wee that operated in the late 60s and 1970s. So we can look at these two stops and stops in between often on the same exact block of the Lower East Side and really invites us to see all of the different layers that it contained, in the buildings that stand around us.
Lauren, let's talk about a couple of these sites in chronological order. I'm going to roll back to that farm in Sebastian de Brito, located at what is now 143 Allen Street. Tell us a little bit about his farm in this community.
Yes, so Sebastian de Brito, he was initially an enslaved man who worked for the Dutch West India Company. And this plot of land was actually the product of organizing amongst the enslaved Africans of the Dutch West India Company, where they wanted freedom. They were granted in return half freedom, and so that meant that they were allocated their own land. They could move outside of the colony, but they still had to work, work for the Dutch West India Company and give them like a certain amount of crops, from their farmland. And so from these numerous land grants, Sebastian de Brito is one of these recipients of a land grant where now he was able to have his own space, and they were able to build all of, you know, his neighbors, where it was, you know, multiple blocks, you can imagine, where they are, multiple plots of land where it created what we now call the land of the blacks. And so this is what you can imagine as what is New York's first black self-contained community, mm-hmm. where people are living and working alongside each other. And so this block that is now a row house, it was once part of Sebastian's land, and it is a part for us to be able to tell the story of the land of the blacks that, you know, now that legacy has gone, even though it has encompassed areas like Little Italy, Chinatown, and even Washington Square Park. And that land was taken away when the British arrived, but thinking about the land that's now there, where this row house that has historical significance because of the person who owned it, mm-hmm. was a wealthy shipping merchant who was part of the cotton trade. And so this is an important site, not just because it's connected to Sebastian, but it helps us to push visitors or anyone who comes to learn about this history that, you know, what sites are preserved in our cities, and mm-hmm. what are the reasons why, or why is black history sometimes erased? And in seeing how the gentleman, George Sutton, who's a merchant, how his house has historical significance because of the architecture, and that's preserved, where this massive land of, you know, black, you know, free black people, is those landmarks are not there. So being able to interpret the absence through what exists is like a tricky thing, but also very powerful, I think, in encouraging people to look closer at their neighborhoods.
We're talking about the Reclaiming Black Spaces walking tour with Kat Lloyd, Director of Programs at the Tenement Museum, and Lauren O'Brien, Lead Project Scholar. So the next site I want to talk about was an eye popper for me, because my son plays basketball here at this site every weekend. It's located at Sarah D. Roosevelt Park, Rivington and Forsyth. And I never knew this. I don't know how I feel about this now. It's a burial ground. So, Catherine, what do we know about this location, why it was chosen as a burial ground, who was buried there?
So this burial ground actually would have been only the second burial ground for people of African descent in New York City. It was established there in 1795, really through advocacy within the black community of New Yorkers in the late 18th century. The land was essentially chosen by a group of people, black New Yorkers, who came together under the name of the African Society. And they chose this land because it was on the ruins of a farm that had been owned by a man named James DeLancey, who himself was an enslaver, right? He mm-hmm. Farmed this land and had enslaved Africans working on the farm. But during the revolution, he was loyal to the British government. He had been evicted from the land after the war, and this land sat empty. So this group of Black New Yorkers coming together right after the first African burial ground further south was closed by the city to be built over as the city's expanding, you know, this group of people immediately comes together and advocates for the city to preserve and, you know, mark out space for a burial ground for people of African descent. So that's how the burial ground ends up in this land.
Do we know, Kat, how does the space memorialize this history? Do we know where the remains are?
So, you know, many of the people who were laid to rest here, you know, were reinterred in Cypress Hills Cemetery in Brooklyn in the 1850s. However, on this land now is a community garden called Mpinda Kalunga Community Garden. They were established in 1983, really as a way to, you know, reclaim the space of the park for the community. And in naming the garden, the founders looked at the history of this land, learned that it had been a burial ground, and really sought to memorialize the space as a sacred space, as it had been for Black New Yorkers in the 19th century.
I feel better. And now I'm going to make my son's whole team go over and look at that plaque.
You should. They actually have a Juneteenth celebration every year. And this year's is particularly special. They've commissioned, the garden has commissioned an artist to do an art installation in the garden connecting to the Black and Indigenous history of the Lower East Side.
I will be texting his coach right after the show today. Let's talk about... a firefighter named Wesley Williams, Lauren, who worked at he worked at Engine 55 at 363 Broome Street. Tell us about Wesley Williams.
Yes, so Wesley Williams is the first Black firefighter at Engine 55, which is in Little Italy today, and he's the third Black firefighter in the city of New York. And so Wesley Williams' story is important because, again, in thinking about where are, you know, different Black figures or histories preserved, it's interesting in Harlem, because that is where Wesley Williams is originally from. He has a plaque, there's a statue, a bust of him by the YMCA, but in this Engine 55, there is a book at the firehouse, but on the outside, there's no trace of, you know, that this large part of Black history and New York history happened at this station. And so, as I mentioned before, Wesley Williams was born in Harlem in 1897. He eventually works his way up into wanting to be a firefighter. He has to, you know, dealing with discrimination where he's not able to take the test in the same way that other prospective firefighters are doing. And so he's meeting kind of obstacles, race-based obstacles throughout his way, but he successfully becomes a firefighter, and, you know, is happy and moves into this fire engine. And if you can imagine, on the first day, the lieutenant resigns or sends in his letter of resignation. Mm-hmm. And even though, in addition to the lieutenant, all of the other firemen try to seek transfer. And so this is his first day. And so, you know, they couldn't all get transferred. And so if you can imagine, he had to deal with isolation, prejudice. One of the more heartbreaking stories are instances where while going out to fight fires, they would sometimes leave him. And so he's left in these buildings to fight for himself. But, you know, he and... reading, you know, his descendants have wrote a book about him, so we know his story through that, where he stayed committed and he continued to work up his ranks. And one, I think, important story is not only is Wesley Williams kind of carving a space for himself, but he intentionally builds a fraternal organization for other Black firefighters, and that's called the Vulcan Society. It still exists today. Hmm. But I think it's something very remarkable for someone to endure so much pain and strife, but to want to make, to in crossing over that bridge, wanting to make it easier for others to come. And to me, that's a larger part of his legacy instead of just being first, you know, is creating this Vulcan Society where, even today, Black firefighters are still coming together and building community and trying to continue to diversify this major social organization that services New Yorkers.
We're talking about the Reclaiming Black Spaces walking tour with Lauren O'Brien and Catherine Lloyd from the Tenement Museum. So let's talk about the downtown core. That's Congress of Racial Equality Headquarters. That's at 6466 Delancey. And Lauren, what were the members of downtown core interested in tackling that were specific to Black Lower East Side residents? I mean, I think we all know that they were this enormous civil rights organization.
Yes. So one thing that I think it's great about this stop is that it helps us realize that civil rights, although it happened, you know, occurred nationally, most chapters try to focus on regional issues. And so in the Lower East Side, a big problem was housing discrimination. Mm. And so one of my favorite stories about this site is because, you know, in present day, this is a Subway restaurant. But one of the tactics that downtown core would do, they called sandwich testing. And so what they would do is, it's funny, ironic that it became a Subway. But what they would do is, so they would send a Black core member or a couple to go seek out an apartment or to go look at a listing. And then they would notate if, you know, how they were treated, if the landlord said there were no availabilities. Mm-hmm. And so then after that, they would come back and then they would send a white core member to go to see if the answer was different. And then again, they kept meticulous notes and like wrote in notebooks. And then to create the sandwich, they would again send another Black core member to see, you know, are the answers the same, you know, at all these three instances so that they can kind of create a pattern. So it's not just one incident, but you can record that each building, you know, just to have a more meticulous record keeping. Mm. And so what they would do is they would take that info and then file legal complaints against different landlords to try to ensure that all residents of the Lower East Side could get access to quality
housing. Yeah.
For an affordable, so they wouldn't, it would also be equal as well.
I do want to mention, Kat, that in addition to this walking tour, the Tenement Museum has launched a new permanent exhibit telling the stories of Black tenement communities. Tell us a little bit about the exhibit in our last minute or two.
Sure. Well, so actually, Lauren is also the lead researcher for this initiative. But over the next year and a half, we'll be working on a project that, for the first time in the museum's history, interprets in a recreated apartment an African-American couple. And the idea for this tour really came about through staff. The couple that we'll be talking about in this apartment, they actually didn't live in 97 Orchard Street, the Tenement Museum's, first historic building. They lived further west in the city at 17 Lawrence Street. But the Tenement Museum, we have a document, an 1869 city directory, that lists a Joseph Moore of Irish descent who is part of one of our exhibits already at the museum. He and his wife Bridget lived in 97 Orchard Street in the 1860s. But directly above that Joseph Moore is another Joseph Moore who lives at 17 Lawrence Street, and he has the designation right next to his name of COLD, that he's colored. And mm-hmm. None of the other Joseph Moores on the city directory have that same designation. And so our staff, our educators over the years, really began talking about these two men together, right? And their different experiences in the city with the same name. They also have the same profession as waiters in New York, living blocks apart. And so this new exhibit...
This is what a great...
Really
what a great
these two men's lives. Yeah,
yeah, what a... Oh, that's such an interesting way to look at it. Okay, so the walking tour is called Reclaiming Black Spaces Walking Tour. It's part of the Tenement Museum. You can check it out on their website if you want to take the tour. I speak with Lauren O'Brien, head lead project scholar at the Tenement Museum, and Kat Lloyd, director of programs at the Tenement Museum. Lauren and Kat, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate all the information and history.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that is all of it for this hour. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you after the news.